Grand Canyon University, an affordable private Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering more than 270 programs online. In addition to federal grants and aid, GCU's online students received nearly $130 million in institutional scholarships in 2022. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you may qualify for.
Welcome to Ruthie's Table 4, a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios.
Yeah, nice to see you. Yeah,
nice to see you.
Are you working tonight?
No, I'm really sad about that. You're in here cooking pork and milk, apparently.
Apparently so.
I don't know. And then you're sitting there to eat afterwards. So you
yes, if that's okay. I've got a table for four. Can't wait. Where are you sitting us?
I haven't done the table plan yet, Jamie, but yeah. Tell me where you want to go.
Out.
The famous table four, of
I think I'm going to be quite well behaved today, so you can put me next to delicate ears.
Have you seen your name, Jamie?
Yeah, I'm back on the rotor.
I know, you're back on the job list.
But as James, not Jamie.
Welcome back to Ruthie's Table 4. In the last episode, we spoke to Jamie Oliver about childhood, moving to London, and getting started in television. In this episode, we'll be talking about his school meals campaign, but not before we send him back into the River Cafe kitchen after a 20-year absence to prepare a River Cafe classic. When we said to you, as we say to every guest, choose a recipe from one of the books, I was really moved when they told me this morning that you had chosen pork cooked in milk. And I was wondering whether you might tell me why you've chosen that recipe.
Well, I was lucky enough to be taught it by you and Rose. And the idea of cooking meat in milk was something that I had never been taught anywhere or at college. And I hadn't, at that point, read anywhere. And really, it was very simple ingredients. It was pork shoulder, which is obviously the cheaper cut of meat and it needs slow cooking. And
it has the fat in it.
Yeah, and the connective tissues. And these incredible leafy lemons, but just the zest, sage, garlic and some butter. And that was really it. And sometimes at Christmas, you might say you can put a little nutmeg in if you wish. It was the most genius meal. And I remember trying it for the first time and I'm sure things slowed down and went in slow motion. And it was like this, like the milk that you pour in, I'm going to start explaining the recipe, which I'm going to do now, but the meat was so unctuous and like lip-stickingly delicious. And like the milk split into essentially whey and ricotta, sort of. And it was just the most bonkersly beautiful thing I think I'd ever eaten.
It was actually a recipe that I was taught by Richard's mother, Dada.
Really? And, bless Dada. I remember Dada. Yeah, I remember Dada. Yeah, I do.
And she actually cooked. She cooked, didn't she say, quite a lot with milk. So she would always finish off some meat dish by taking the gravy and then, you know, the juices in the pan and then adding milk to it and making the sauce.
So, Danny.
Hello.
Pork and milk. That's like kind of an old school ritual of the River Cafe, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's one of the first things Rose taught me.
Yeah, Rose and Ruby taught me as well.
Yeah.
It looks like the recipe hasn't changed, right? New season's garlic, lovely Sicilian lemon zest, sage
from the garden,
salt, pepper, and pork.
And pork and hot milk, hot boiling milk,
Would you like to read the recipe? Yeah. What is it called? Go ahead.
Pork cooked in milk serves 8 people. 3 kilos of pork shoulder, 2 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil, 1.5 litres of full fat milk, 50 grams of butter, 5 garlic cloves peeled and halved, a small handful of fresh sage, 2 lemons, rind pared and pith removed. Remove the rind and most of the fat from the pork and season the meat. Heat the olive oil in a thick bottom pan, brown the meat, remove it from the pan, and pour away the fat.
So we take the shoulder off the bone first, brown it in a little bit of butter and olive oil, get a nice golden brown colour on it.
Yeah.
And then once it's this colour, we then chuck in the garlic.
Yeah. So the pork is obviously a lovely
Beautiful free-range pig.
Free-range middle white pork.
If people wanted to do this at home, you just get a whole or a half shoulder deboned, skin off. You've left some of the fat on.
Yeah, the
and
fat's
that's
very
rendering.
Important because that's the flavour and it helps the crispiness, allows it to go golden brown.
It's probably what, like three kilos.
I'd say 3 kilos.
Kilos of pork there. Yeah. Pork shoulder. Pork shoulder's obviously sweet and delicious and needs longer to cook, but it's so tasty.
Moist and it takes hours and it just keeps all that.
Three bulbs of garlic?
Three or four bulbs of fresh garlic, or if it's drier garlic then probably less.
And
right?
This has probably been browned for what, half an hour?
Half 20, an hour on a medium to low heat.
It's really dark.
Keep turning it.
The smell, as soon as that garlic goes in, it's just
gorgeous. Beautiful. And then we put the sage in because we want to cook the sage out.
So about a handful of pick sage.
Handful of pick sage.
Oh, lovely.
Heat the milk to below boiling point and set aside. Melt the butter in the original pan, add the garlic with the sage, and when brown, return the pork to the pan. Add hot milk, bring to the boil, add the lemon, and reduce the heat.
Such a beautiful way, all the beautiful.
But you've used a speed peeler to take just the lovely yellow skin off the Sicilian lemons.
Yeah, that's it.
About just five lemons, by the way.
Yeah, five lemons, and we just use that obviously to flavour the actual meat and also to help split the milk as it goes in, because what happens is, as it reduces, the milk splits and you end up with these lovely curds.
Like ricotta, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly, and it just has that amazing flavour. It takes on the flavour of the pig. Yeah. Absolutely beautiful.
I always think this moment's quite, because you've got the fat from the pork.
Yeah.
The fat from the butter, and then you've got the oils from the lemon skin.
Yeah.
It's like this little
trinity.
Fat,
yeah. Should we get the milk in now?
Yeah, go for it.
Right, we've got some hot milk just before boiling.
About a litre, right?
Yeah. A couple probably.
And of course, that milk is just cleaning the bottom of the pan.
Yeah, and it's glazing it, and it's getting all those lovely caramelised juices of the pig.
What do you reckon? 4 hours?
At least, just in time for your dinner.
That's exciting. Oh, damn right. Damn right.
Place the lid on the pan and simmer slowly for at least 3 hours. When the pork is cooked, the milk will have curdled into brown nuggets. Carefully remove the meat and serve on a plate and spoon over the sauce. Delicious. I remember you teaching me that, and there's a simplicity but also a bravery, I think, about the cooking that you've always created here. And you've got this piece of pork and you keep turning it and you want it dark, not just because the pork's dark, but you get the sticky bits.
Yeah.
And I remember I was about to add the milk maybe when it was lightly golden, and you're like, no, keep going. And I remember being nervous. And you're like, no, trust me. But that magic when the milk interacts with the zest of the lemon, which curdles the milk on purpose.
Yeah. The chemistry of cooking is so interesting, isn't it? The lemon with the juices and then the milk. And it's quite a difficult thing to get right, isn't it? Because if you put too much milk in, it never gets that brown kind of crusty. If you don't put enough milk in, then it kind of becomes stuck on the bottom. And also, once you pour the milk in to about 3/4 of the pork, you know, you don't want to touch it. We used to say, don't touch it.
Don't move it.
Just, you know, because let it just be patiently. And I think it cooks a long time. But I must say, in the new world of eating, I haven't had it for a very long time. Mm-hmm. So I was really, it's not something I make very often. Oh, but I was really, really pleased to see that you chose that.
I tell you what I'd done once, and it was such a kind of powerful dish, I think, in a delicious sense and unexpected. I took the liberty of doing it with chicken in a book many years later.
You did.
And then it went mad in the New York Times and they started like redoing it. I'm like, and I think I even did a story about it. I said, I learned that at the River Cafe with pork. But of course, it is delicious with chicken. It's not the same as pork, but it's still utterly delicious. Yeah. And of course, people can get chicken so easily. Yeah.
But if you do a spatchcock chicken and you kind of get it quite brown, and then just be brave and halfway through, just pour a lot of milk, you know, almost up to the chicken, and then it, in a big pan, then it reduces. Then you scrape up the
and you get all
juices,
the flavor from the bones.
And it's really nice with the lemon. Yeah, it's delicious.
And you would serve it with beautiful polenta,
yeah,
some simple greens, and these chunks of pork, and this weird but wonderful kind of, how would you describe it? Like a, it's not a gravy. It's kind of a.
It's a curdled sauce. Curdled, isn't it? It's almost like it's gone wrong.
Yeah.
You know? It's almost and then, like what you don't want to happen when you make ice cream.
Yeah.
When you add the eggs to the milk and then it can curdle.
Yeah.
You know, gnocchi romano.
But the story was so clear, wasn't it? Yeah. It's just sage and lemon, and garlic and
simple. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Help helps is a maxim I believe in. We all carry around stress and hardship, and when we keep it inside, it starts to chip away. Therapy is a safe place, and therapy is for everyone. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Visit betterhelp.com/Ruthie today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Ruthie. BetterHelp.com/Ruthie.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlan, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
The only thing I was nervous about coming in the cab over was reading this recipe out, because I'm like, I've worked out ways to blag it, so it looks like, but...
So is that dyslexia?
Yeah.
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 And did they not realise what that was at your age?
You had to be literally blind to have any extra help in my school. And I was pulled out of class into a class which was a very kindly named Special Needs. So imagine 880 boys, and then... Can I have Jamie, please, and Mr. Lovett, and we'd be pulled out, and we'd end up in literally in the attic of the school, learning how to spell the most basic things. But I think it was, and of course, in a boys' school, you would never learn to cook. Because that's for the girls then. I mean, like...
Did they have cooking lessons for the girls in your school?
Well, in the girls' schools, but they certainly... You know, it was just very chauvinist, isn't it? And it's funny, because I left school with this chip on my shoulder about, like, this is not for me. And they're not serving every child. And I think I've only literally just brushed the last chip off my shoulder.
You know, I keep talking about that ad for the Felix Project, which says tonight... 400,000 children in Britain will have the same meal, nothing, you know, and that we're living this time right now where I find it shocking that we still can't feed our children.
Yeah.
We've been looking at countries' approaches to food, and I grew up at a time when Lyndon Johnson in the late 60s started the Head Start program, and it was that you would give every child in poverty a breakfast. It was breakfast, you know, there's that great phrase, no child should be disadvantaged by his birth. In fact, a lot of children were disadvantaged by the fact that they went to school hungry.
Yeah.
And so they fed children. They fed children breakfast. So you'd come to school and any child who needed breakfast would have it. It was a head start. And studies are, years later, that the children who were on Head Start were not taking welfare. So they
flourished out of it.
And that, in fact, investment by society to invest in children. Actually, if you want to be crass about it, save the money later on.
Yeah, I mean, there's some sensible countries that invest in it. And it's funny, like, I mean, I know it's a name drop, but I saw Tony Blair last week, just the week before, just because it was a moment of reflection, since because he was the first prime minister that found new money invested in equipment and training and the money on the plate. And I said, like, Tony, like, we've got to go faster on this. And actually his position he was incredible to support me when we did it 15, 16 years ago, but he's like, I'm even more on this now than ever. And it makes more sense than ever. And because of my position, I've remained apolitical, but currently at the moment, neither of the two big parties have child health on the manifesto as something that can be voted for.
I don't know how you feel, but I don't understand why we can't feed every single child, whether the parent makes $1 million or $1. You know, that every child, and also the idea that Sam Taylor Johnson was on, and she can remember being put in a separate line because she was a child that needed school lunches to be paid for. And I'm sure, I don't know how they do it now. What is a society that does that to a kid?
It was often a lady with a clipboard and a name and a token. But, you know, now with technology like the card system, which can be incredibly intelligent if the government just allowed it to get organised. I mean, that's what happens is little islands of hope, but the government never really consolidates genius and spreads genius and facilitates genius. So from that little card that gives you a free school meal that no other kid needs to know you're having, you can also ping a text to a parent saying they had this for lunch, which means you don't have to cook them the same thing for dinner, if that's the case. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. There's just loads of really clever things that can happen. And
how do you qualify for a free lunch? Do you know that the salary that you
earn,
what you have to earn?
As a household, you have to earn less than £7,400 a year. That's not as a person, that's as a household.
There are households that live on £7,000 a year.
1.2 million of them, yeah. And then there's a gap between the free school lunch kids, who are parents that are on universal credit. Yeah. So universal credit is complex in the sense that it bends and it was invented to be bendy. So you could have people on 20 grand per household, which is still not loads of money, but the average is about 13 to 14. Mm. So there's about 600,000 kids that fall into that, that don't get a free school lunch, that would have a household that earn, you know, sort of £10,000 to £14,000 a year, that can't get a free school lunch 190 days of the year. So, you know, look, every council has a different price per school lunch. It could be £2.50, it could be £3.50. But if you've got three kids and that sort of money, then that totals up per month pretty big, you know. So there's still gaps and there's lack of consistency. But also, there's been an amazing bit of work done just recently, independently. And they said, if you just gave everyone a free school lunch, over a 20-year period, Britain would be over £40 billion better off. Mm. And they look at it very surgically around kind of productivity, how you get through school, how much you would cost the NHS, and conservatively. So what's interesting is all the math says invest in the system, treat them all the same. And from a restaurant point of view, which is essentially what they are, if you've got a school that's 50% school lunches, that's struggling. Genius cooking will happen, but only at about 70%, because the numbers don't. Mm. You can't have enough people on the line. You can't fix the equipment. Mm. So there is a kind of business, you know. So free school lunches definitely would make the food better, more consistent, and then, you know, so but more importantly, give those young people from poor postcodes, which is essentially what it is, give them much more hope and the ability to thrive.
Yeah, because they don't get a free school lunch and the parents can't afford.
Yeah, they'll get nothing.
They'll have nothing to eat.
And at the moment, there is more lunch cooks than ever saying, I'm having to illegally give them lunches, not on the system. And there's teachers paying for 10 or 12 kids a day from some there or that some budget they can find. So obviously they can't visually watch kids not have a meal. Mm. And like you say, it could be the only hot meal of the day, and that's not an exaggeration. And then, of course, outside of the 190 days of school a year, there's what we call holiday hunger, which is when you actually, even in that 6 to 7 week summer holiday, if you measure public health or children, you can see that there's a massive spike of ill health because they don't they get stuff, but it's all the wrong stuff. Mm. So that's what Marcus Rashford was working on, which was some kind of provision in the holidays for these very vulnerable families.
Mm. What can we do?
Well, I think like keeping the story going. I mean, this year, one of the tactics where you, I mean, I've been on it constantly since 15 years ago. But one of the things we're doing this year, which I would love you to get involved in any way you could, is we're actually, it's funny, when you're like overwhelmed by a problem, you keep telling the story of the problem. And then, then I had this genius idea about how about we do an annual school food awards that's amazing with real prizes and real incentives, and how about we celebrate the best up and coming lunch cook and the best team and the best primary school, secondary school, special school, the best teacher teaching cooking. So we've got 8 different awards this year that we're going to launch, and we're doing it with the One Show and actually The Sun, and we're trying to get as many people behind it, but hopefully it will give us an opportunity to share what good looks like, because I definitely haven't done enough of that in the last 15 years. I've really only focused on the darkness, so that's a change of tact. These institutions are incredible. These teachers are amazing. And they haven't had, you know, I think I've worked through 5 or 6 prime ministers. I've worked through 13 education secretaries in 15 years, 16 years since school dinners. So imagine changing the head chef at the River Cafe that many times in that time. I mean, it's. I do think the institution of school can be something so much more powerful than it already is. People forget it's the biggest restaurant group. 30,000 odd schools, over 3,000 secondary schools. It's nearly 5 million meals a day. Mm. 85,000 lunch cooks, which are largely women, which are largely parents, most of the time. So there's an incredible workforce, bigger than the military, the Navy, like out there cooking for kids every day.
If you like listening to Ruthie's Table 4, would you please make sure to rate and review the podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.
A new season of Bridgerton is here. And with it, a new season of Bridgerton, the official podcast. I'm your host, Gabrielle Collins, and this season, we are bringing fans even deeper into the ton. Colin Bridgerton has returned from his travels abroad. Is betrothal written in the stars for the eligible bachelor? Meanwhile, the ton is reverberating with speculation of who holds Lady Whistledown's pen. We're discussing it all. I sit down with Nicola Coughlin, Luke Newton, Shonda Rhimes, and more to offer an exclusive peek behind the scenes of each episode of the new season. Watch season 3 of the Shondaland series on Netflix. Then, fall in love all over again by listening to Bridgerton, the official podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to catch a new episode every Thursday.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turns sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, as a child with dyslexia and working as a 9-year-old in the kitchen and knowing that your passion for food. That was what you was. Did you ever waver from wanting to be a chef? Did you ever think at one point maybe I'd like to be a racing car driver?
No, I mean it wasn't
or
like
a helicopter pilot.
It's an interesting one because I think there's so much noise around what are you doing when you leave school, what are you doing, what are you doing. I knew I could cook, so I knew I'd never have to be hungry. There's always a job for sure, but like I play with a lot of Lego, and I know it's a random thing to say, but like that was the building blocks of not just doing what it tells you to do, but then when it's all destroyed, when you can make something through fantasy, which is much more really like what Richard would do with architecture, right? You know what I mean, so somehow Lego, which was my best friend, and cooking sort of, I don't know, they kind of gave me the confidence to just know that things were going to be all right.
We've talked about, you know, food as politics and and society and fairness. We've talked about food in your father's kitchen doing something that I still can't remember with the bottles.
Bottling up.
Bottling up. And we've talked about food in the River Cafe and the friends you made and Rose and memories. And food is memory. You know, today we've talked about our memories.
Yeah.
And I think that food is also comfort. Is there a food or some foods that you would think, I need a bit of comfort right now?
Yeah.
What shall I eat? Would you cook? Would you buy something? Would you open a
bag? No, I'll cook something.
Yeah, what would you cook, Jamie Oliver?
This is, unsurprisingly, it's a dish inspired by my time here at the River Cafe. But it's a bit of a melange between two things, right? So it's spaghetti arrabbiata. And certainly one of the ways I was taught it, and I know there's many ways, was to gently heat oil and put whole fresh chilies in and just let them kind of just cook beautifully. And you put a little hole in the chili so it doesn't give over the aggressive heat. Well, you can make it as hot as you like, because obviously arrabbiata means angry, but and that means hot. But it's a really rounded fruit. Chili flavor, and then the beautiful tomatoes go in, and a little garlic, of course, in the oil before the tomatoes. The little hijack on that was I remember seeing you and Rose not very often using vodka as a base to a risotto. I don't know if it's because there was no wine close to hand or vermouth, but it wasn't like always had an intention. I'm sure you used vodka when you make risotto and you fry the sofrito off. You would add often wine, but you did vodka, and I thought, oh my God, I've never seen that before. But of course, you cook it all away, and you're left with this kind of cleanliness that's amazing. And then I think you continued to make some form of like spring risotto that was just mind-blowing. Anyway, so I kind of incorporated that hack into before I added the tomatoes into this arrabbiata. And you just end up this and lemon zest. So I'm telling this terribly, sorry. Oil and chilies, slowly, 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 don't rush it. Then lemon zest, garlic, vodka. Cook the vodka away, then in with the tomatoes. And then this magic sauce happens. And then just simple garlicky pan grattata, which are the crispy breadcrumbs and spaghetti. And I will curl up on a sofa with that. And I don't need to cry because I just have... And if I'm feeling sadder than I need to, I'll just put more chili in. But that dish can console any heart. But I also love it because, all right, minus the vodka, it's really quite cheap. I mean, the breadcrumbs are cheap and the garlic's tiny bit. I mean, it's all, but it's so delicious. And I do love chili, as you know.
I do. Well, when you need comfort, you can have your arrabbiata, but you can also pick up the phone and call me.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you,
Jamie.
Thank you for having me.
I love you.
Love you too. Everyone loves Ruthie, you know that.
That's great.
Thank you. Really nice. Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. Nice, big conversation.
The River Cafe Lookbook is now available in bookshops and online. It has over 100 recipes beautifully illustrated with photographs from the renowned photographer Matthew Donaldson. The book has 50 delicious and easy-to-prepare recipes, including a host of River Cafe classics that have been specially adapted for new cooks. The River Cafe Lookbook, recipes for cooks of all ages. Ruthie's Table 4 is a production of iHeartRadio and Atomize Studios. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Managing your diabetes just got easier. The powerful new Dexcom G7 lets you see your glucose numbers on your compatible watch and phone without fingersticks. And because Dexcom G7 is the most accurate CGM system, you can be confident in your food, exercise, and medication decisions. And all those decisions can lead to big results, like more time in range and lower A1C. Get started at Dexcom.com.
Dexcom data on file 2023. If your glucose alerts and readings from the G7 do not match symptoms or expectations, use a blood glucose meter to make diabetes treatment decisions. For a list of compatible devices, visit Dexcom.com.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. It's a simple truth. No matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.